simply will not buy the world that the elders have given them. They see too much hypocrisy in it. They see too many things that are wrong with it. And I think that the elders are going to have to realize that they simply can no longer browbeat youth into following its established path.
Welcome back to Sunset Politics. I'm Story.
I'm Molly, and we are so excited to be back and recording this episode and chatting with you all about what's been going on in our country and in the world.
Yeah, it's been so long since we've done it. I don't think we recorded in March. I think the last time we recorded was February. So
yeah, I think so. So it's been a minute, and we're, again, very excited to be back. But Story, before we start, how have you been doing? Update us on your life.
Yeah, so I had I was on spring break a few weeks ago. I went to New York. I was going to be there for Trump's trial, but it got delayed, so I wasn't. But I had a great time anyway. Now I'm back, and new term started, and I'm taking a lot of really interesting classes. So super excited for that. I'm doing well overall, I'd say. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm taking some really cool classes this quarter that I'm really excited about. I'm taking this class called Social Justice Through Philanthropy, and we get to give $85,000 away to nonprofits, and our focus is nonprofits in Central and South America. So that's been really fun, and I think it will just be such a great experience. I know that our professor says that a lot of people end up like joining the advisory board for the Seattle International Foundation and the Philanthropy Lab, which are the places that fund the whole class. And this is like a class they offer, I think, at like 20 to 30 universities. So I'm honestly just really honored to be able to be a part of it. So yeah. And then I'm also taking a women's rights class this quarter, and I have to write a research paper. So a little nervous about that, but also honestly looking forward to it. What about you, Story? What classes are you taking this quarter that you're excited about?
Let's see. I'm taking... let's see, this is a bit boring, but I'm taking Intro to Game Theory, which is really fun for me, but it's like math, and I haven't done math seriously in years. So that's exciting. Got to relearn those skills. And then, let's see, one like really interesting class I'm taking is it's called like Women in Medieval Islam, and it's basically like reading like Arabic sources from like the medieval era and like translating them and talking about different kinds of interpretations and stuff. And it's really fun, and it's great practice for my Arabic. I haven't really been in an Arabic class like since the summer, so getting back into those skills, but it's really fun.
That sounds so awesome. And with the game theory class, honestly, that sounds so cool. And I can relate with the math skills because I'm taking an astronomy class this quarter. I have not done math in forever, and it's so funny how even basic math, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's like 5 + 4 = 9, right? I'm not making that up.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's been fun. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today that is not so fun. So we followed the unfolding situation in the Middle East a lot on this show. And in the last couple of months, there have been a lot of major updates. I guess let's start with like the most recent thing that's going on like right now. And that is people are very worried that Iran is going to attack Israel because Israel attacked an Iranian consulate in Syria, killing a big general and a few other like major figures. And Israel is right now saying that it could happen within the next 48 hours. Some are saying, you know, that they haven't decided if they're going to attack yet. But you know, it's very possible that something big is going to have happened relating to this by the time this episode releases. So,
yeah. Definitely. I feel like one thing that I think is kind of interesting about what's going on right now, too, with Iran and Israel is this has always been something that has been talked about. But I don't think people have ever, at least I feel like I have never taken it fully seriously because it's like, no, Iran isn't going to do that. They know like the retaliations back would be, you know, very consequential. But it seems like at this point, it is a big possibility, especially I did see when I was reading through the news earlier that the U.S. was warning their people at their embassy in Israel to, you know, stay clear of certain areas and to be very cautious. And I know that a lot of other European countries as well have been also urging their citizens across the seas in the Middle East to make sure that they are being safe and that they even consider evacuating, which makes me think that they are taking this threat pretty seriously. But I will say one thing. I feel like we're going to talk about conspiracies a lot today, but there's been so many conspiracies about this. I've seen on TikTok about people saying, oh, the end times are coming. The Bible's being fulfilled. So definitely had a couple of laughs with this, but obviously it is a very serious situation.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ask me, like, I think Iran is trying to find every, like, any possible way that it can to not attack Israel right now. But I feel like it feels like it's being forced to, because that strike on the consulate is an extreme escalation. And from Iran's perspective, you can't really, like, leave that alone. But they also really do not want to get into a war with Israel. They don't want to get into a war with the U.S. The U.S. doesn't, I don't think the U.S. wants to get into war with Iran. But I do think Israel wants the U.S. to get into war with Iran. So I think that's probably Israel's strategy, is they basically want to provoke Iran into provoking the U.S. And we have no idea, like, what's going to happen.
That is one thing that I also think is really interesting, is it seems like Israel has, in a lot of the situations in the last, like, 6 months, really been the aggressor with other Middle Eastern countries within this. Or at least, like, continued aggression in other ways. Like, again, like, striking the consulate in Syria, or striking, even though it still hasn't been fully confirmed, but striking the apartment building in Beirut, Lebanon. There's just been a lot of little things that have happened that kind of seem to be, like, small escalations, or that seem like small escalations, I guess you could say. But it'll be really interesting to see how this unfolds, and if it really does create a bigger war out of what's happening right now in Gaza as well.
Yeah, I think there is a world where it does not, but I also think that a lot of people are saying it's very likely that it will escalate, at least, you know, if not into a broader war, into, you know, exchanges between, you know, Iran, the U.S., Israel. One interesting thing that Iran did, which I think backs up my point, is that Iran said to the U.S., if you get Israel to cease fire in Gaza, then we won't attack Israel. And obviously the U.S. hasn't done that. I don't know if that's – it's possible that, like, that moves the needle for Biden, because you know, the U.S. has been sort of like – we've said that we don't like some things that Israel's doing, but we haven't really, like, done much to like, force them to stop. And, you know, maybe the threat of war with Iran – can convince the U.S. that it's worth it to force Israel to stop. Maybe it can't. I wrote an article on Substack, if you want to check that out, basically detailing, like, why I think Biden has, like, been doing so little to push Israel, because I don't think he can actually do much more because of political pressure in the U.S. But war with Iran, like, puts political pressure in the opposite direction, so it could move the needle a little bit. But it's also possible that Biden doesn't really care and he's totally willing to go to war with Iran, or he doesn't think it'll actually escalate to full war. You know, a lot of this information is stuff that we don't have access to as the public, that they're making their decisions on. But there's certainly a real risk of escalation and potentially even war with Iran, and with Lebanon also.
Absolutely. And I think as well that this is a story that we probably will continue to update you all on if there is something to update with. But it kind of is a scary thought right now, just being in the unknown of what could happen, I guess. Kind of on the same topic of Israel, on the same day that they attacked the Iranian consulate in Syria, Israel struck 3 different aid trucks belonging to the World Central Kitchen, which is an aid relief organization that had arranged a massive food shipment to Gaza, because we know right now that Gaza is at extreme risk of famine. There's already people starving in Gaza as a result of all of the war and destruction that is going on. And just some quick facts for you all. there were seven of these aid workers belonging to different nationalities, different countries. I know there was, I think, one American, I want to say an Australian. And there, I think it was one woman and six men, if I'm correct on that. And the cars were marked, including on the roof. And these aid organizations do have to coordinate their movements with the IDF. And this is a quote from PBS. Aid organizations use complex systems to try to keep their teams safe. Typically, they send an advance plan to COGAT, the Israeli Defense Agency responsible for Palestinian civilian matters, which then shares it with the Israeli army, said a military official. As deliveries unfold, the aid groups can communicate with the military in real time, said the official, speaking on condition of anonymity in line with army briefing rules. So basically, this organization did coordinate with the IDF, their movements, and they had even set up a certain path that they were going to drive down, just so that the IDF knew exactly where they were going to be at every moment. And there's more of a timeline that you can read. I definitely recommend checking out PBS. They have a really comprehensive, great timeline that I definitely think is a great way to also understand the different movements that they were going in and just where they were stopping. However, even with these coordinated movements, at 11:09 p.m., Israel launched a first missile, which struck one of the trucks, and the aid workers that survived that first strike fled to one of the other trucks, which was then struck 2 minutes later. And then the survivors from that then got into the last truck that was hit, and all seven aid workers were murdered. And they were accompanied by a translator and his brother, it sounds like. And it sounds like the translator did not make it as well. And this comes also just with the additional knowledge that over 33,000 Palestinians have been murdered. And I think a lot of people I know who I've seen talking about this have basically said that they think that this is Israel trying to actively starve a population because they knew that this was an aid truck delivering food. The IDF's claim is that they thought there were Hamas gunmen that were accompanying these vehicles. I don't really know if I believe that or not, to be honest, because they have a history of striking aid trucks that have, again, coordinated their movements. But it's definitely just really heartbreaking that these people were, you know, doing something good and they were, you know, subjected to losing their lives in such horrible ways. And I know that the founder of the World Central Kitchen did say that they will be pulling the rest of their operations from Gaza just for safety reasons.
Yeah. And just like one thing, Israel didn't say there was Hamas gunmen with them. There was one man with a gun who may or may not have been associated with Hamas, who was not in the convoy at the time. We know that. And we actually know they were following the convoy beforehand. There was a stop where it's believed that the gunman got out of the convoy. And then after he had gotten out is when they carried out the strike. So, you know, maybe they didn't know, but, you know, certainly it doesn't look like a good excuse. And even if, you know, you did believe that there was a man with a gun there, like there's, I think, seven or eight people, you said, is that really worth it? Like, to kill like one man with a gun who may or may not have been associated with Hamas? I think it's actually kind of like, I think sometimes like aid workers will carry guns in environments like this because they don't want to get attacked by anyone. So yeah. And I mean, you're absolutely right that it, you know, it was coordinated beforehand, that, you know, Israel knew where these people were going. They should have been able to clearly identify the trucks as aid trucks. And yeah, I think it seems like part of a strategy to essentially starve the population. And they say it's not. They say, oh, this was a battalion on its own that was acting on its own, you know, independently of any command. But like, if you look at it, like, they get a lot of like bang for their buck. It's sort of like for doing this, because like it's convinced a bunch of, I think World Central Kitchen has stopped all of its operations pretty much. So you've got, mm-hmm. You've taken out a lot of this aid just by one strike.
100%. And like you're saying, like, it makes other organizations, I think, very anxious and weary to go take aid in person and help with different like strategies in person, because I think they worry about the same thing happening to them, which we've kind of seen time and time again happen, like even with medical professionals, which is understandable. And it's just really scary, I think, because it makes a lot of, again, organizations less and less inclined to go deliver aid that is very needed at this time. And just on that note, too, I also know Story and I were wanting to talk about the Democratic primary a little bit. And if you didn't know, there was a big movement by Arab and Muslim and just Middle Eastern in general Americans for people to vote uncommitted in the Democratic primary to show their support for the Palestinians and to show President Biden that the way he is handling the situation in Gaza is not okay and will not be something that people will compromise their vote on. And I think that this is a really difficult issue, obviously, but I will say, like, people do things in numbers. I know in Michigan alone, over 100,000 people voted uncommitted. And Michigan has a very big Arab and Muslim population, and Biden did win this state in 2020. But I think a lot of people are worried that people are either going to vote third party instead, just because I think for a lot of Arab and Muslim Americans, this is an issue we are not willing to compromise on. And I think people can say what they want, obviously, about the election and the importance of voting. But at the end of the day, people do have a right to vote for who they would like to vote for. So I think that a big point in this is to push for President Biden and his administration to do more to call Israel out for their aggression in Gaza and their extremism within mass murdering civilians, like, indiscriminately. So I think that's like a big point of why people did this as well, is to prove a point. And just kind of also like in connection to that as well, I know the Biden administration has been having a lot more trouble connecting with Muslim Americans. Every year the White House hosts an iftar during Ramadan. And I know that it was reported that a lot of Muslim leaders and community members declined the invitation to this year in protest of the U.S.'s support for Israel's actions in Gaza, and instead had a quiet downsized event instead. So I just thought that was very interesting as well.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. It shows that a lot of people are trying to put pressure on Biden to change his policies. How successful it will be, I don't know. And that's because there's, you know, we were talking about game theory earlier in my game theory class, but we have this concept in game theory of a commitment problem, where someone would like to threaten to do something, or would like to commit to doing something that would allow them to achieve an end that they like, but they can't actually credibly commit to doing that, because once it gets to that point, it's not optimal. And that's like sort of the trouble with the primary thing, is that sort of the Biden has the nomination. He's you can't stop him from getting that. What you can do is basically threaten to not vote for him in the general. But if the alternative is Trump, like, a lot of people are not going to vote for Trump over Biden, even if they're single issue voters on Gaza, because Trump is just as bad, if not worse, on Gaza. So, you know, it's a lot of people that are voting uncommitted are probably going to vote for Biden in the general. So it's the people sort of have a commitment problem. We can't credibly commit to voting for Trump, because Trump's, you know, just as bad, if not worse, on Gaza, and I think significantly worse on almost every other issue. But even if you're just a single issue voter, it's hard to justify voting for Trump over Biden. So I don't know how likely it is to actually change any of Biden's policies to vote uncommitted. But do it if you want.
I think it is also a year that we will see a lot more third party voting going on in the general election. Like, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and a lot of people think I'm wrong, but I do think we'll see maybe a significantly larger number of people voting third party this year than maybe in past election years, just because, again, of a lot of individual and communities around the U.S. and their issues with how the Biden administration has been handling Gaza. And as you said, even though a lot of people do believe that Trump would be worse, or that Trump is worse among other issues, I know that there are unfortunately still a population of Arabs in particular that are so angry at Biden that they are almost voting for Trump in retaliation, which I think is very weird and just not the right way to go about things. But I'm very curious to see what the numbers look like in this election for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that the number of people voting third party will go up. I don't know how significantly, though, because the way our system is set up, third parties are never going to win. So, yeah, you're not going to get the majority of people to do that. What you're going to do is you're going to get like people that are people that are really mad. And if there's enough people like that, that can put a little bit of pressure on Biden. But I don't know how much.
100%. But yeah, definitely this will probably be continuously for the next few months, like a developing story that we will be talking about. But it was just, I thought it was worth it to talk about it now briefly, just to kind of hear where people are at since we're in April of 2024 right now.
Yeah. And I want to clarify, I don't blame anyone for not wanting to vote for Biden over Trump, especially if they've had like been personally impacted or family personally impacted by what's going on in Gaza. I just don't think the majority of people are going to think that way.
Yeah. I honestly agree with you, because I will say one thing that this is going to be a bit of a controversial statement, but I will say I have talked to a lot of people that are basically just blaming a bunch of people who don't want to vote for Biden and just calling them selfish and different words. But I think to be able to say something like that is a bit of a privileged statement, because you don't understand the types of things, like not you, obviously, sorry, but like people who are saying that, like they don't know the types of things that those people have experienced or been through or had their family members go through. And I think that like as a like country, like especially in 2020, there was such a push to vote for Biden. And I think like a sense of community of like standing together against Trump. And I think unfortunately right now, that has kind of shifted a little bit, with people being so like, I'm going to vote on like this issue alone, or like, no, you should be voting for Biden against Trump again. Like, I think it's just a very interesting political climate right now. But it's definitely like you said, like, we don't know what people have experienced. Like, we don't know. And like, should those people have to sacrifice their own values or like what's important to them if other people aren't doing the same for them? I don't know. It's a very interesting topic for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
I think a lot of people do think that way, and they're not going to vote for Biden. I kind of wish that it was a greater percentage of people that would do that, because then you would actually put more pressure on Biden. 100%. I don't think that enough people think that way to really make a difference.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's next on our list?
The crisis in Haiti is our next.
Yeah, that one is also sad. So this is another thing that I wrote a Substack article about, and that is, you know, basically in March, fairly early on in March, there was a major escalation in the crisis in Haiti, which has been going on, you know, sort of for a long time. Some people don't say it was a crisis, but like, I mean, it's, there are incredibly high rates of poverty, houselessness, food shortage, and there are basically gangs, some people say they're not gangs, they're paramilitaries, whatever it is, like organized armed groups that do, that carry out like massacres, essentially, to advance whatever political aim they have, that also end up essentially running schools and hospitals and things like that, because the central government is too weak and won't do anything, and actually in many cases works with the gangs. And so basically in March, there was a big explosion in gang violence. Lots of, you know, prisoners were released, and now like there's, and this has been like sort of in the works for a while, but there's a big push to do an intervention. Essentially, it's backed by the U.S. The U.S. really is all behind this. If you read the news, they'll say it's Kenya. It's really the U.S. basically outsourcing it to Kenya. So basically the U.S. pushed Kenya to, and there's a U.N. mandate for this, but they basically got the U.N. to authorize Kenya to send in about 1,000 police officers, plus a few others from random other nations, mainly in the Caribbean and in Africa, to basically stabilize the place, which there's a bad history of missions like that doing stuff in Haiti that tend not to work because they basically just reify, you know, the interests of the outside parties. It's like the U.S. gets what it wants out of Haiti, but that's not always good for the Haitian people. And the U.S. interest really here is making sure that people don't come here because they're refugees. So that's I think that's really what is going on, is basically the U.S. is sending Kenyan police, which have a history of corruption, and it's illegal under Kenyan law to send them there, but the president of Kenya is doing them anyway, basically just to prevent like Haitians from coming to the U.S. and being refugees. I don't think it's I don't think the security mission is going to do a very good job of stabilizing it. Even if it does, it's not going to fundamentally change anything, which sort of is what Haiti needs, is pretty fundamental change. And the history of Haiti is really complicated, and you know, I don't think we really have enough time to go into to everything that led up to here, but it's a lot of colonization, a lot of intervention by the U.S., and it's a really bad situation. I think the U.S. shares a lot of the blame for it, and I think what we're trying to do to fix it is going to do more harm than good. Or maybe if it does some good, it's not going to do enough.
Absolutely. I honestly just feel so bad for the people of Haiti too, because I'm sure that just crisis after crisis and a lot of like the cycles of violence that are going on there and that have been going on there for such a long time, like I just can't imagine like living through that. And again, like kind of like what you're talking about too, with like how the U.S. is trying to do something, but also like doesn't want those people to come here and be refugees necessarily. Like in a way you're like, oh, that's good, but also it's like if they're living in such bad conditions and like have, you know, not great people in charge and they need fundamental change, it just seems like a lot that needs, like a lot of work that needs to be done still. And you should make a short about the history of Haiti, because I would listen to that.
I would seriously do, I might do that.
You should. And also, again, go listen to stories, I can't talk today. Substack articles about Haiti and about Israel and Iran. Not subtle plug.
Yeah. I do my best to make those articles good. Do you want to say anything else on Haiti? We sort of, I think we hit the main points.
Yeah, no, honestly, I don't know as much about this situation, which is also why I definitely would be interested in you recording a short. But I honestly just feel like, again, I feel really bad for these people, and I just hope that something changes, like that is able to actually create active change.
Do you want to talk about Arizona?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have not heard yet, the Arizona Supreme Court decided that they should rule that an abortion ban from 1864 is enforceable. Keep in mind that this law is older than, or like, yeah, this law is older than the state of Arizona itself. Like before Arizona was literally a state. Like this is Civil War era times. Basically what this law reads is, quote, a person who provides, supplies, or administers to a pregnant woman or procures such woman to take any medicine, drugs, or substance, or uses or employs any instrument or other means whatever with intent thereby to procure the miscarriage of such woman, unless it is necessary to save her life, shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 2 years nor more than 5 years. So basically, the Supreme Court of Arizona is saying that unless an abortion is taking place to save the life of the mother, any other kind of abortion is able to be banned. Again, this does not make exceptions for sexual assault or incest. And it clears the way, again, for basically a ban on any abortions. And even with saving the mother's life, we have seen Republicans already try to, you know, weasel their way into changing that in other states. So I would not be surprised if even with this passing or saying it can be, you know, enforced if Republicans did even try to get rid of that exception. And one thing I think is interesting to point out as well is former President Trump commented on this ruling saying it was, quote unquote, too far. And he said, quote, "It's all about the states' rights and that will be straightened out. I'm sure that the governor and everyone else are going to bring it back into reason and that'll be taken care of, I think, very quickly." And he's likely saying this because, for context, Governor Hobbs of Arizona is a Democrat, but both the Senate and House are controlled by the Republican Party. So it seems as though he's kind of thinking that this will not last. But I just think it's a very interesting and honestly just shocking thing that could have happened right now. We've seen, again, a lot of Republicans in other states as well trying to get these bans put into place. But I also thought it was kind of interesting that Trump was commenting on this. I don't know if it's because he's trying to convince maybe Republicans who do support having a choice that, you know, this is something that he also wants to be left up to states, but it's just a very sad situation. What are your thoughts, Story?
Yeah, I think it's also a very sad situation. I think this bill is horrible. I think the Attorney General of Arizona said that they were not going to enforce it at all, which I think is the right move. And I think the Republican reaction to this is really interesting. And it's sort of a continuation of everything that's happened since Roe v. Wade, but it's really like the dog caught the car finally, and it has, you know, no idea what to do with it. Like Republicans have been for like 50 years trying to get Roe v. Wade overturned. And now that it has, they've realized, wait, people actually really like abortion and they think it should be legal. And so they get punished in electorally every time, you know, every time a state like tries to ban abortion, not every time, but like more often than you would think, even in like deep red states, like people are coming out in favor of abortion. And we've talked about a few instances of that in the show before, but I think this is another one like that, where especially in a swing state like Arizona, you really don't want abortion to be banned if you're a Republican, because that, you know, people like abortion and they're going to punish you in the polls for that. Similar thing happened in Alabama. I don't think we talked about this on the last one, but they almost totally banned in vitro fertilization, which that I think Trump was also against that. And I think Trump sees the writing on the walls and he's like, yeah, no, like if we're like the anti-abortion party, we're not going to win these elections.
I just think it's crazy. Just last thing I want to say, like, again, it's 2024. This country is not supposed to be religious. And the problem I keep running into when I look more into these people that want to ban abortion is it's their religious beliefs. And again, you don't know every situation. You don't know their beliefs. And again, people should have a choice. A lot of people who are pro-choice don't necessarily agree with abortion, quote unquote, you know, morally or whatever you want to say, but they also think like it's not my business what somebody else does with their body. Like that's the whole point. Like I think a lot of people who are Republican just assume, oh, if you're pro-choice, like you love abortion, you think it's great. And it's like, no, it's saying I have a choice, so do you. And again, I just think it'd be funny if we turn the tables, we make this about men. Like if this was men, like would this still be a law? Probably not, if we're being honest. And a lot of these people who are trying to ban abortion, including again, even though Trump is kind of saying, oh, you know, but Trump has also paid for abortions himself. So I just think that's also very ironic that a lot of these officials are behind the scenes, you know, using these things for their own personal matters as well. So, yeah.
Yep, you're totally right. happens every time. It's weird hypocrisy. Speaking of hypocrisy, we're going to talk about the TikTok ban next. Ban is sort of a misnomer. It's, you know, a potentially a ban. Really what it is the U.S. said, right? I don't think it's passed the House yet, but I believe it passed the Senate. So now we're going to force TikTok to either be sold to a non-Chinese company or be banned. So it's possible it gets banned, it's possible it ends up in someone else's hands. And the, you know, at least the stated rationale for this is that there's a threat that China could steal the data from it because there's some Chinese law that allows them to talk to Chinese companies and you know, get the data, which, like, if you're worried about that, like, why force them to sell it? Because now you just know they're going to take it, because it's like, well, they're not going to be able to in the future. So now they're definitely going to take our data. It's like, great.
I also just feel like this whole TikTok banning stuff is just BS. Sorry, like, just going to say it, like, or like having to sell it, because in a way, like, this is one of the only companies that we don't, like, social media companies in the US that we don't have control over. And I think a lot of it, honestly, is, I don't want to be too dramatic, but I think some of it is a bit of like fear mongering the American people, because a lot of people who have a following on TikTok were speaking out against this. And I think even wrote a letter to a lot of congressional officials saying, like, this is how I make an income. Like, I was able to quit my job, or, you know, become a stay at home mom or whatever it is, or stay at home dad, or, you know, blow up my small business. And this is how a lot of Americans make an income. And I'm sorry, if China wants to watch me do my weird TikTok dance or do my clothing haul, like, that's fine with me. Like, I hope they enjoy, like, I don't know. Like, I understand, you know, obviously data concerns are like a concern and are a risk, but also the US government also, like, they like survey people still. So I know it's like obviously different if it's another country, but I just think a lot of this, honestly, like, it's just really unfortunate. And I will say, like, this is kind of random, but one thing that really infuriated me is I really did not like how the current CEO of TikTok was treated by, I think he's the CEO, by like the congressional officials.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he experienced a lot of racism, and it really, it angered me. He is, you know what his, is he from Singapore?
He's Singaporean.
Yeah, he's Singaporean. And they kept asking him if he's Chinese, if he's part of the Chinese Communist Party. And he was, like, very respectful back, even though he's experienced this blatant racism, after he answered respectfully, "No, Senator, I'm not. I am a, you know, Singaporean citizen. I serve my country." And his wife, I believe, is a American citizen, or has American citizenship, and his children do as well. But he did say, like, at this point, he doesn't. Maybe in the future he might apply, but he's never been affiliated with, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, with China. And I really thought it was inappropriate the way that the senators were asking him these questions. I honestly was disgusted by it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you're totally right. I think, like, even if, like, you believe that he's lying about not being secretly Chinese, like, what do you get by asking that?
Exactly.
Like, nothing, right?
And you're just showing your racism, honestly, at the end of the day, yeah. Like, continuing to ask him these questions when he's been very respectful.
Yeah. And, like, imagine if they, like, brought Mark Zuckerberg out and they were like, "Mr. Zuckerberg, have you ever worked for Mossad?"
Yep.
Like, that's, you know, do you have Israeli citizenship? Like, that would be crazy. Like,
yep.
Right.
But
yeah. So speaking of, like, the hypocrisy thing, like, cause I sort of introduced that, but I didn't really explain what I meant by that. But yeah, like, so, like, Facebook, Google, they collect all the same data that TikTok does. So it's really not about the data collection. It's about, like, the fact that it's, you know, a Chinese company that could potentially steal it. So yeah. And then the other, like, weird hypocrisy thing is that the president, Biden, who wants to ban TikTok, has a TikTok account. And Trump, the other candidate, does not have a TikTok account. And he says that he doesn't think it should be banned. His reasoning is a bit weird. He thinks that banning TikTok makes Facebook stronger, and he hates Facebook. So,
what do you mean? Sorry, you're not on Truth Social? Trump's social media page? Crazy.
That's really funny. That's really funny. Yeah.
I mean, this honestly perfectly sets up our next topic whenever you're ready, because... Yeah. Honestly, what the heck were these people thinking?
Yeah, we're gonna do another segment of that. So you had some stuff you wanted to talk to me about regarding the eclipse.
Yes. So, as many of you I'm sure know, we had a total solar eclipse on April 8th. Unfortunately, I did not get to see it. It was cloudy here on the West Coast, at least where I am, and so I did not get to view this. But, you know, it was beautiful. I saw pictures of it. But I want to tell you all some of my favorite conspiracy theories that I saw on TikTok. And I also just looked them up just to see which ones were being reported by news outlets. And I thought it was cool. There was a whole article by US Today just debunking all of these crazy rumors. But there are some crazy ones out there, y'all. So the first one is about NASA and their CERN project. So the theory was that NASA was going to be shooting rockets into the moon to open a portal into another dimension during the eclipse. And this is just a flat out lie. CERN is a project that NASA has been utilizing to try to measure, I believe it's dark matter, because this is supposed to help them figure out more about the Big Bang and the creation of our universe. And this has also been operating since March and something that they've just been working on in general for a long time. There's obviously a lot of planning that goes into what is happening at NASA. So obviously this is not true. And why would NASA put us in danger genuinely? Like, they want to explore space. If they, you know, because a lot of people were also saying, like, this is going to kill all of us. You know, the rockets are going to backfire. They're going to blow up the Earth. And I'm like, why would NASA want to do that?
Well, but, I mean, okay. It makes a certain kind of sense, right? Like, why else are they telling you that you can't look at the sun during the eclipse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, sure. I mean, like, the moon is blocking out the sun. You can't see the sun. It's not going to hurt you. Right? So they gotta be hiding something.
I mean, that's another one people were saying. They were just like, this isn't even a conspiracy theory. This is my favorite thing I have ever heard about the eclipses. Somebody said, quote, the government wants me to not look at the sun with my, you know, my bare eyes and wear those eclipse glasses. So I'm just gonna look at the sun straight up. And I was literally scrolling through the comments, laughing my butt off, because people were just like, you're going to go blind, like, or at least for a moment, right? You know that, right? And they're like, nope, the government's telling me to do it, so it can't be true. Hilarious. Another really funny one that I heard is that people were thinking that, again, kind of partially because of the NASA situation with CERN, that we were going to descend into 3 to 5 days of darkness, total darkness. To clarify that conspiracy theory, the only darkness that did occur is if you were in the path of totality, you would see darkness for, I believe they said, maximum 4 minutes. Do you see the sun outside right now, Story? Or at least light? Because it looks light to me outside.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought that was a really funny one. And then this also is one of my favorites. So somebody made a video on TikTok saying that the eclipse was going to be crossing again around, or over 7 cities called Nineveh? I think, I don't know if Nineveh? That's how you say it.
That's, yeah, like Nineveh.
Sorry,
from,
yes.
Like the Bible, right?
Yep. And so people were saying, yeah, 7 cities, like, oh, like the end times must be coming. Like, Jesus is going to return. Like, this is a little too creepy that it's happening. And I also believe that part of the eclipse was crossing, like almost making an X over the path of the eclipse that happened, I believe, in 2017. So people were saying, oh, that's where Jesus is going to come back. But it turns out that the eclipse actually was only in the path of 2 cities with that name. And that basically people who were saying that were just trying to fearmonger people. And then the last one I wanted to mention that I just thought was really funny is that people were saying that something else was going to be happening on the same day as the eclipse. Again, maybe the end of the world, maybe the government attacking us, because the National Guard was activated, because officials in 15 states who were located within the path of totality expected millions of tourists. Like, I know in Texas, there was millions of tourists. And there were concerns that the visitors would jam the highways or overload the cell phone networks and just overwhelm public safety resources, which led a lot of leaders to call in the National Guard just for help with, like, controlling a lot of these things. And so people, again, were saying, like, oh, they're saying the cell phones could be overloaded and all these things. Like, they're planning something big, but we're still here. Today is April 12th. Like, I think we're good.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
One thing I wanted to add on, because you mentioned that, you know, lots of people weren't wearing their glasses when they looked at the sun. Someone made a heat map of Google searches for "my eyes suddenly hurt," and it perfectly matches the path of totality.
That is so funny. That is, oh, that's one of the most wild things I've heard. Kudos to that person.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and it ties into to what we were talking about earlier, the Twitter AI, I think its name is like Grok or something, generated a fake headline regarding Iran and Israel over the weekend. Because there are enough people talking about it on Twitter, I guess, of the potential of Iran attacking Israel. And I think there are a couple of people that posted, like, fake stories of it happening. But the AI, like, basically said, like, yep, Iran has attacked Israel with heavy missiles, whatever those are. And they wrote like a blurb for it, like a fuller version of the story. And it's really funny. It says, on October 7th, 2023, Iran launched a missile strike on Tel Aviv, Israel, in retaliation for earlier attacks on Israel by the Palestinian military wing of Hamas.
That is just crazy. Just spreading so literal fake news on Twitter.
Saying, yeah, so oh on October God. 7th, like, and this was like published by Twitter, like the Twitter AI. It was, yeah. And it's just basically throwing a word salad of like things related to the conflict into the blurb. So, yeah.
Crazy stuff. Our last what the heck were they thinking for the day is that today O.J. Simpson passed away, I believe at the age of 76, as a result of cancer. He is believed to have murdered his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her good friend, Ron Goldman, 2 years, I believe, after him and Nicole had divorced. He actually won the criminal trial, so he did not face jail time. But there was a lot of suspicious things going on, such as his lawyers, including the Kardashian family's father, Robert Kardashian, advising him to stop taking his arthritis medication, which made his hands swell up and would not fit the gloves, as well as Nicole's blood being found on a sock that was in his hotel room. There's just a lot of crazy evidence out there. He actually also lost the civil trial against him. And when he died, obviously today, he was still $114 million in debt to Ron Goldman and his family. And the craziest part of all this, and sorry, I'm sure you have stuff to add to, so I'll just say this really quickly, but he wrote a book that actually was never, I think it never ended up being published because there was a lot of upsetness over it, called If I Did It, that detailed a firsthand account of how he would have committed this crime. And he, even though the book I believe never came out, he did do an interview where he talks about how this would have happened, and it's really, really creepy.
Oh, the book, I'm pretty sure it did come out. It's a really funny story. Yeah, so I think like in the civil trial, he like lost the rights to it or something, or he gave them up to like get some of the value for it. And the family of the victims ended up publishing it, and they made the if really, really small. So it just looks like I did it. And if you look really closely, there's an if. So yeah. I want to say, like, how does it feel? Okay, like, yeah. And yeah, the story about the book is pretty funny. But yeah.
I just have one last thing to say, OJ. Yeah. I'm sure you're looking up at us right now.
Yeah, true.
Sorry, not sorry. Had to say
it. He definitely did it.
Oh, for sure. No doubt in my mind. A lot of people, I mean, I know we don't have time to go into the whole conspiracy theory, but a lot of people also think that his son did it, and that, like, from his previous marriage, and that he took the blame. But regardless, he was still involved. He's still guilty. Whatever really did happen, I have no doubt in my mind he was involved. I mean, if you watch the video from when he was declared not guilty by the jury, Robert Kardashian's face says it all. He looks shocked that they found him not guilty. So, a crazy story. But yeah, unless if you have anything else to add.
No, I think this has been a great episode.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I had so much fun talking with you and just learning from you. And I hope that you all really enjoyed listening to our discussion. One last thing I wanted to mention is that April is National Arab American Heritage Month. Since I am Lebanese myself, I just wanted to wish any other listeners who are Arab American a happy Arab American Heritage Month. And I definitely encourage people to look into all of the amazing accomplishments of all of the great Arab American people that we have in this country. But that's all I wanted to add. And if there's nothing else, we will see you all soon, and sunset out.